This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're presenting an hour of radio drama for the Halloween season, our take on the mysterious disappearance of the schoolmaster Ichabod Crane. And now, from Plan B Theater Company, it's Radio Hour, Episode 15, Sleepy Hollow.
For a learned man, Ichabod Crane startled easily. He startled at the moan of whippoorwills, at the boding of tree frogs, and if by some chance the night flung a beetle against his face, well. The schoolmaster, however, could be forgiven his faint heart, as the road that he walked home ran very near a glen by the name of Sleepy Hollow.
Hello!
Some say the place was fouled by a German magus. Some that it was cursed by indigenous elders.
Hello?
The children had too many nightmares. The farmers heard chanting at the forest's edge. Ichabod was not the only one to see bad luck in a beetle. He was not the only one to meet ghosts on the road.
I'm telling you, you old fogey, on the road to Terry, I raced the headless horseman for a bowl of punch.
Oh, pig spit!
On my honor, pig!
What's the going rate for that?
Dear neighbors, do not bicker.
I'm not bickering, Crane. She is. She's accusing me of spinning yarns. Now, would I spin yarns about ghosts on the road for our new schoolmaster?
You open your mouth, it's a yarn.
The horseman and me and my steed rushed along every bend.
That thing outside is no steed.
I will call him what he is, Peg. He's a proper steed for a proper man.
That horse is nothing but vinegar. Now stop drinking Mr. Crane's beer.
This beer?
I let him.
The beer he left sitting?
The beer he paid for.
I did pay, but he can have it. I filled my canteen from a knothole earlier today. Well, I'm well watered.
He's drinking out of trees, man. Give him back his pint.
Take back your vilification of Daredevil, and I will.
Who's Daredevil?
Oh, his so-called horse, which ain't daring at all, though we agree on devil.
Now, that gelding you ride looks like a chunk of old milk. You could be twins.
Ma, don't bother with this one, Mr. Crane. He seems affable, but he ain't.
Oh, worry not, Mrs.
I ain't no Mrs.
Miss.
No Miss either. Never married. I'm Peg. Or Old Peg. No titles.
Forgive me, Old Peg, but you need not worry for my perspicacitousness.
Your what?
My powers of judgment in friend or information? I can win over
you. You see, Mr. Crooknose has read a dozen books,
oh,
I bet.
More than that.
More. How many?
I lost count.
God's wounds. Did you hear that, woman?
I heard, boy.
Did you hear that through the gobs of wax in your ears? Yeah. He's lost count.
It's a finite number.
Would you say 50?
Oh, I don't like to crow.
You should.
I shan't.
Have a bit of pride.
My mother urges humility.
Is your family full of geniuses? I bet it is. I'm going to look them up. Is she a genius?
No. Well, yes, she's gifted in a way, Mr. Bones.
Oh, don't call him Bones. He's a Van Brunt, tail to snout.
Oh, I thought you said your surname was Bones.
It's my chosen name. It's what my friends call me.
Ah!
By yourself, you dumpy old heathen! You were saying?
Ah, yes, my mother. She's very sensitive to spirits, more so than I.
My family is sensitive to spirits.
The kind you find in a bottle.
You go too far, Peg! You cannot slander my family in front of half the town.
I'm not slandering anyone, but I won't have in you filling his head with hooey.
Are you saying there's no headless horseman, no devil, no witches?
I'm not saying there's no horseman, you pretty boy swagger.
If you're saying no horseman, you slander everyone in 5 miles.
The reports of the specter are widespread, and there was a witch last month.
I'm not denying what people say. Or that I sometimes feel a draught when I pass the churchyard.
Yeah, when have you gone near a church?
I go by it, and it's still a free country.
Free? What's that mean, Crane? Oh,
what's it mean for a dead man with no head to wager you a bowl of punch, huh? Sweep up the glass and tell me that.
I never said the headless horseman wagered me a bowl of punch.
You did so.
You did, sir.
I wagered him the punch.
And so with barley on his breath, Ichabod hurried down the road, past the whippoorwills and frogs and beetles, and came to the safety of his lamp. He settled on a pile of straw and warmed his fingers. The story of Brom Bones flickered in his head. What would he do if he met the specter with no head? He chided himself.
running from a whinny.
It had probably been an ordinary horse and not an evil spirit, probably. He found his page in Cotton Mather's History of New England Witchcraft.
The only antidote for fear, my son, is knowledge.
Alas, his scholarship cured him of nothing before the moon rose. The half-drunk beer from Old Peg's drew him deeper into the straw, and from there into dreams. The next morning, his pupils gaped in silence at the horror on the blackboard.
Now, which of you can untangle this numerary knot? Anyone? Did the old teacher do some arithmetic with you?
By noon, Ichabod was supervising the class in drawing. He would have to go easy on this town, he thought, even if he felt uneasy being in it.
Oh, my, Marjorie.
It's Maggie.
All right, Maggie, what a ghastly physique you've drawn. Who is your subject? Tell me, let me guess. Is that the scarecrow by the mayor's house?
No.
Is it Job from the Bible, half-starved and tearing his robe in grief? Living or dead?
Living, but not very well.
Ah, is it someone you know?
Yes, sir.
What are you snickering at? Back to work with you. So, it's a living person, someone you know?
And then he saw it, the likeness.
Well... Well! Give me your slate, Marjorie.
Who?
Maggie, give it here. And you hush. I said hush. Stop your tittering or I shall provoke its opposite.
As the day wasted, Ichabod obsessed over the drawing as he trudged along. The girl had made him lank, with feet like shovels, a nose like a weathercock.
Oh, you're hideous. You're a hideous man. Even the children think it.
He'd always been tender about his looks, and his mother had not helped. She'd often said about his father, the man was uglier than Caliban. He knew but two things about his father. He was ugly and was stabbed 11 times. The second fact he'd acquired not from his mother, but the asylum she died in. And to the last rattle of Mary Gibson Crane, she'd insisted the devil was everywhere in wait and had possessed his father. Yet now was not the time for self-absorption. He had a new pupil today. A piano tinkled from the Van Tassel's mansion. Squadrons of geese rode in the pond. Regiments of turkeys gobbled in the yard. As Ichabod strode near, he pictured them roasting in apple juice. The schoolmaster had been living on hard bread, and so he planned to accord himself well with the Van Tassel child. A butler led him to a velveted foyer. The piano trailed off. Ichabod wondered if he might be dreaming. But as Cat Van Tassel alighted from a salon, he knew this life until now had been sleep, and only now did he wake.
Ah! You must be the mystery, the mistress of the house, the younger of the two.
I fit your description.
Not the mystery. I said mystery. Though it is a mistress before me, not a sphinx. You are not a riddle or puzzlement.
No, but I reserve the right to be.
Of course, and I shall preserve your reserving of it. Forgive me. My tongue is a terrible internuncio.
That bodes well for a teacher of music.
Yeah, but truly, I can instruct in psalmody. I was raised by nuns, you see. I spent my days tucked into the tenor section of a choir, and my nights tucked into bed with Cotton Mather.
Mather, eh? Mm. I'm wading into Wollstonecraft at the moment.
A Vindication of the Rights of Woman? I've read it twice.
Do you agree with it?
Well, I think it's obvious that both men and women ought to be treated as rational beings. Aristotle was mistaken.
Yes, he was.
Ichabod Crane.
Cat Van Tassel.
Cat?
Katrina, technically, but I despise it.
Then I will ever call you Cat.
He led her in some warm-ups. She climbed from root to octave, and Ichabod flew beside her. From the bench, he saw nothing but black and white keys and a lady's ankle. To be sure, he'd flown to Love Summit before, but never had the cause of his ascension been so fetchingly intelligent. Ichabod fancied them on a wagon, pots tinkling together in the sunset as they rode for Tennessee. He felt in so many glances that she felt a spark, too. Before he might confirm with her, however...
Where is my sparrow?
Brom, is that you?
Well, it better be. If I see another suitor at your door, I'll drag him behind my horse.
Stop, you're awful.
Ho there, Crooknose!
Mr. Bones!
Oh, the mayor's got you teaching psalms, eh? One-on-one? Tete-a-tete?
According to my contract, now and then.
Now, are you not going to kiss me?
No, not in front of the schoolmaster,
oh,
Brom.
Oh, come, he's seen worse behind the schoolhouse, eh, Crane?
Don't rumble him!
Blast it, man! Your hair's greasier than a roasted duck! Oh. You should try some hot water, Crane.
Don't wipe yourself on him!
It's all right.
Use a handkerchief, not his coat.
Tomorrow's my laundry.
I should hope so, Crane. Now, where's my smooch, you Dutch songbird?
Later.
Later? Because of him?
Later, because I said so.
I'll give you later.
Don't!
What in tarnation was that sound?
Some stable boy poking at my horse, I bet.
Or someone made a simple mistake.
Back in a flash.
Brom, leave it. Brom! Oh, handsome man.
Well, I didn't know that you were affianced.
I'm not. He hasn't asked me yet.
You seem familiar with each other.
Meaning?
Oh, just that you seem...
Our families summer together. Shall we return to the lesson?
Of course. We should do that. So let's return to Euterpe.
To whom?
Euterpe, one of the muses presiding over music in the Greco-Roman religion.
I'm a Christian woman, Mr. Crane.
I did not mean to imply otherwise. I merely thought you might like a classical allusion.
Just play, would you?
Miss Fantassel, if I have done you any injury...
I said play.
Of course. At your command, madam.
You're listening to Plan B Theater's production Radio Hour, Episode 15, Sleepy Hollow. We'll take a break and come back for Act 2. This is Radio West on KUER.
KUER is proud to be a listener-supported public radio station. We'd like to thank our community of more than 10,000 sustainers who make a monthly contribution to the station, starting at just $5 a month. Because of your support, all the news, stories, and conversations that you hear are independent, calm, and commercial-free. If something you heard on KUER made a difference to you recently, become a new sustainer or increase your existing pledge at KUER.org/donate.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're offering another live radio play from Plan B Theater Company. Now, Act 2 of Radio Hour, Episode 15, Sleepy Hollow.
From a dream of unrequited love, Ichabod bolted up.
Get back, you beast! That's mine!
He'd fallen asleep with an apple in his pocket, and somehow the plow horse had freed itself.
You've eaten my Sunday pants, you brute!
Control yourself, boy! You forgot to put him inside again.
I did not, Mr. Van Ripper. I left him locked in his stall. Once again, your horse has proven catastrophic.
Gunpowder ain't catastrophize anything.
Gunpowder is liquidating my breakfast. My trousers have a gaping hole. I can see my thigh. I shall sue for damages, sir.
You call that a thigh?
I know my anatomy.
Do you shave your legs?
Do I what?
Just smooth as a Catholic statue down there.
Be that as it may, I paid $2 for these pants.
Oh, you overpaid.
I think not. They're Amish wool.
They were Amish wool. Now they're woeful.
Thanks to you, they are.
My wife will give you needle and thread. Tamp yourself down.
Thread? What of the fabric? The mile of missing fabric!
Later, the students of Sleepy Hollow stared at Ichabod with empty heads. Their vacancy reminded him of howling space itself.
Can anyone define this figure of speech? Forget the others, please, and focus on these letters here. Apodixis, anyone? What's it mean? Marjorie?
It's Maggie!
Answer, please.
What's the question?
Apodixis, what does it mean?
I don't know, but it doesn't sound good.
It's Greek, Maggie, and I told you what it meant on Thursday!
Mr. Crane, how goes the lesson?
Hello, children.
Mr. Bones, I was not expecting you.
I saw the door ajar. I feared you may have been set upon by highwaymen.
Ah, well, we have had no bandits, but thank you for your concern. What do you have there in the bag?
These hinges ought to be oiled.
Yes, thank you. I shall dispatch one of my pupils to see to their maintenance, Marjorie.
That's not my name!
See to it.
No need, no need. I found the can. You students can stay put. Stay put, Maggie. I believe Mr. Crane was teaching you something. We sit for lessons. Sit. And hold this bag for me.
Yes, Mr. Vedbrand.
Call me Bones.
Yes, Mr. Bones.
You really don't have to bother with that?
Is this door in the habit of swinging open? It seems off-kilter.
Yes, it does. The last man left the building in disrepair.
How's the latch?
It doesn't work. I secure the building with willow.
How's that?
I employ several lengths of willow. I tie the latch to the nail on the wall with a butterfly bend.
If you tie the door from inside, Crane, how the devil do you get out of here?
Oh, I whiz out the window. I asked for silence.
I can't help it. I pictured you.
He asked for silence, class.
Mr. Bones, I thank you for your assistance in controlling them.
But of course, I am no expert as you are, and I'm surely too soft. I cracked my whip over your head, Maggie, to spare you the rod. I know your teacher has used it with repetition. He never swings without hitting, I hear. Mr. Crane is not the sort of man to idly swing a rod. Are you, Crane?
I should say not.
No. Listen to this man, children. You have a Socrates in your new schoolmaster. And men of his size bedeck the world but once a generation.
Too generous, Mr. Bones.
Not at all. I speak right on. I always speak right on. Now be sure to fix this door.
It's a promise.
Also, hang a piece of iron over the threshold. There's at least one witch in Sleepy Hollow. Maybe two. Oh. Can you get a hold of some iron?
My host will have some. I can doubtless procure it from him, but who?
Oh, Lord in heaven, I forget myself. I had another reason for surprising you, Crane. My Katrina sent me. She raved about her singing lesson with you. She wants to see you twice per week.
Indeed. I thought the lesson had gone rather badly.
Well, apparently not. She wants to see you on Saturdays in addition. She's willing to pay. Oh, and she wants you to have this salted pork as an apology for sniping at you.
Salted pork?
Maggie, pork? Now? Can you do Saturdays?
Certainly, yes, any time.
Very good. My Katrina has a bounty of talent in the recesses of her person, and I'm delighted that a teacher of your blamelessness and discretion will help her pluck it forth.
I'm likewise delighted. Please extend my thanks for her support.
I will with haste.
Come nightfall, Ichabod settled onto his straw with a wedge of salted pork. He imagined he could hear the pianoforte of a Dutch princess. She played in minor key. He thought,
why is she asking me to her estate twice per week?
He thought,
she did seem displeased with Brahm yesterday. Perhaps she longs for wit over width. Stop it, man.
He found a page in the King James Bible.
Thy teeth are as a flock of sheep. Oh, my, the Songs of Solomon. Coincidence? No. Her teeth are like sheep, not a black one in the flock.
But how could he desire the perfection of her? Was the devil in Sleepy Hollow tempting him to the unattainable? No, he thought, if one considered...
She's not married, yet she's not engaged officially, so if I approached her...
From the road came a high, spiteful whinny. Or had it come from the Van Ripper's fields, he could not say. The piano song frayed in his mind and became the bawk of chickens. Was it the headless horseman he'd been hearing on the road? Was a witch at work here? Had Ichabod come to a place infected by hell?
In nomine Patri, e Filii, e Spiritus Sancti. Amen.
He sat in the gaslight till drowsiness cantered on his temples. His memory swayed into might-have-beens and might-bes, and soon he rode an invisible donkey to St. Peter's gate. He asked Peter whether God had shown mercy on his mad, mad mother.
Thank you.
With forbidden pleasures, should this vain world charm,
or its sordid treasures seek to work me harm,
bring to my remembrance sad Gethsemane,
or in darker semblance crossed crowned Calvary.
When my life is ending, though in grief or pain,
when my body changes back to dust again,
on your truth relying through that moral strife,
Jesus, take me dying to eternal wife.
Are you quite all right?
You said wife.
I said what?
You said wife, not life.
I don't think so.
I sang eternal life. You sang eternal wife, as in, Jesus, take me as your eternal wife. I can see you with a bouquet next to Jesus.
Well, I have seen the psalm in print with the word wife.
Oh, you have?
In some editions,
I've never seen it.
I think it's becoming more popular in places. Mm. Some people sing wife to signify one's marriage to the church.
Jesus, take me dying to the altar.
Not the literal altar.
I understand, but what does it mean for Jesus to take you into the church? A believer has entered the church by taking Jesus into one's heart.
Yes, it's a paradox. Which came first, Jesus or the church?
Jesus. I think you have wives on the mind, Ichabod. You call on more ladies in Sleepy Hollow than the moon.
Yes, but platonically, strictly in my capacity.
Oh, there is someone.
Miss Van Tassel, we should resume.
Don't call me miss with your cheeks blushing. We're the same age, almost. Is it Agatha Cummings? You're someone?
There is no someone. Shall we resume?
Hosea Cummings.
Assuredly, I am not enamored of Hosea.
I can see you with one of them. A step down for you, a step up
I
for them.
I will not step up or down with the Cummingses.
Why do you say that? Because of their odor?
Or do they have an odor?
Oh, no, sorry. How boorish of me.
It's not boorish if they do.
They do. Oh. There's a musk from the animals they trap.
I have seen an array of dried pelts on their property.
It looks like the Middle Ages. Though one can live well on beavers, I hear.
I suppose.
And they are brainy, aren't they?
Beavers?
The Sister Cummings. Wouldn't you say they're clever?
They can sound out some Milton. They're nothing like you.
You think I'm a bright person?
Of course I do. You're obviously brilliant.
Am I?
Cat, in these past 5 weeks, between the psalms you can already sing without my coaching, you have recited the poems of Phyllis Wheatley from memory, performed whole speeches from As You Like It, and have asked my opinion of Jean-Jacques Rousseau's theory of human nature.
Which you haven't answered me about.
But I'm still digesting his thesis.
Hurry up!
I will, if you admit you know that you're the smartest woman in Leeds.
Why do you say the smartest woman?
The smartest bipedal entity, besides the most interesting, objectively speaking.
My father doesn't find me very interesting or smart.
Horse feathers!
He doesn't. He grabbed me by the arm last night and said if I were really smart, I'd have my own estate by now.
You're 19, with not a materialist bone in your body.
I'm an old maid, and bound to mammon as much as God.
Piffle! You're a new woman, in the mold of your Mary Wollstonecraft, and I am certain Mr. Bones, Mr. Van Brunt, will propose. How could a stud such as him not find you fit?
You're sweet to me, but I fear my old father is right. I'm as ripe as one of his peaches in the orchard out there. Rosy-cheeked, but soon for the heap.
You're not a peach at all. Never compare yourself to pitted fruit in my company.
To what should I compare myself, Ichabod Crane?
I think you ought not compare yourself. We are singular beings, my mother says in her better moments. She insists we are, each of us, breath, whirling out of the great unmanifest. The heat in our minds, the tides in our blood, the crystals that chime in our bones. It's all unreproducible in its glory.
That's comforting.
She also says the mole on my forehead reminds her of cow pies and is a sign of bad fortune.
I thought moles brought you riches in old age.
That's if they're spread out over the body. A mole at your hairline is death, according to Mother.
I want to meet her. What do you mean in her better moments?
Ah, that. Well...
Hello, choristers! How do you like my new hunting horn?
Not at all. You scared the water out of me. Have you been eavesdropping?
Only since the heat of our minds part. Your mother sounds like a Quaker.
Oh, she was Lutheran to the end.
And? Did something happen? What polished her off?
What a frightful question. Have you no recollection of manners, Brom?
As I recollect, you were supposed to meet my mother for tea 43 minutes ago.
Drat!
Your mother's never on time. Why should I be?
Manners? Could manners be the answer?
I am so sorry for neglecting the time, Mr. Bones.
Do not tender him an apology.
My pocket watch quit working some time ago and
I bear the responsibility.
Yes, you do. But if your watch quit working, Crane, why do you wear it?
Well, I...
It's not hard to have a watch repaired.
No, but...
Stop poking him.
He's wearing a dead watch.
I don't care what he's wearing.
It's funny.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
So you're the judge of everything, huh? You're the judge of manners, the judge of humor, the judge of propriety.
Oh, is there some behavior of mine you find improper, my love? Name it.
Do you want a Latin classification, or shall I use the common name?
If you're going to accuse me of something wicked, then do it.
Mr. Bones, I can vouch for the continued honor of...
I beg your pardon, gentlemen. I feel a sudden fever.
Crane?
Mr. Bones! You surprise
me. Mr. Van Tassel has a well by the barn, man. You needn't hunker like a moose calf over the brook.
I dropped the bucket into the well along with my canteen.
Ah, pity. And I wanted to explain what you witnessed.
I need
there.
No exposition. I know the mutability of young
She isn't always uppity.
I did not take her to be.
The problem is familial.
Thus, none of my affair.
No, but you do call on folks, and naturally they ask for tidbits from high society.
I am no prattler, Mr. Bones.
I trust you are not, but one word can ride faster than two horses.
True, however, what my one word might be is far from obvious.
I know your mother died of lunacy.
Died? She has consumption.
She was a loony and a murderess. I said that I would look your family up, Mr. Crane. You implied to me and Katrina that she was still living, but she is 7 months cold. I have not shared the particulars with anyone, but someone's barn could burn to the ground if people learnt that their schoolmaster's mother had been a raving butcher of husbands, and he declined to mention as much during his interview with the town fathers.
Who told you?
No matter. I only bring it up to illustrate the danger of gossip and to point you toward a feeling of community.
I am the finest schoolmaster this backwater has ever had. You can tell that to the town fathers. I am well qualified.
I agree, and personally I am not deterred by the reports of your mother or even your lies. It's understandable. And though these working class problems tend to pass down in the blood, you're... Nothing but odd so far. If this brain wastage troubles you, too, its manifestation is currently weak. The symptoms appear about your age, so I'd say you've already cleared the hedge. Whiskey? Single malt?
No, thank you.
Cheers anyway. As I was saying, Katrina's problem is familial. Old Baltus made some bad choices, and now his children are nervous to the point of anarchy. So... You see the true foul font of Katrina's tantrum today.
I suppose I do, yes. Good day, Mr. Bones.
Would you like to borrow my horse?
My legs will serve.
Godspeed, then. If you run, you might beat the forces of the night.
Ichabod could not go back to the Van Ripper's barn that night. His mind refused to calm, and so he propped open the windows of the schoolhouse and reckoned with the dark electric air. The desks were lined up like bodies without heads, driving him to poetry.
If he offends in penning this fancy, you must forgive his pale and doltish heart, on which your face performs necromancy and quite unbricks his cold reason's rampart. Ugh, no. And quite unpricks his cold reason's rampart. Who's there?
The schoolmaster looked about the room. The windows were open, every one wafting the chill of October. A perfume of cut hay hung in the night, Was it not a window shutting he'd heard? Ichabod went to the door of the schoolhouse and screwed his eyes on the muddy lane beside the building. This late on a Saturday, no one would be on the roads, and no one he saw in the vast rotting shadows.
Ichabod!
He shut out the night, fumbled with a switch of willow, tied the door.
Ichabod!
The candle guttered. He felt for the piece of iron he'd taken from the Van Ripper's barn. Yes, the iron was there, nailed tight over the threshold. A witch could not enter.
Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil.
My son!
The rasping in the night could have been man or woman, yet Ichabod paid attention with both his outer senses and his inner. So what he heard in the wee hours of the world was beyond the world.
Yes, you know me.
I fear that I do.
Do not fear. Just say my name.
I cannot. You need to move on.
Will you say my name?
Make your peace, please.
Say my name sweetly.
Mary? Mary Gibson Crane? Mother?
A black mass crashed in the door, slid on the hardwood, and stopped near the desk. The candle choked itself out, and Ichabod fixed upon the creature in a beam of moonlight.
No.
He rushed to it. The dog had been slashed a dozen times at least. Long black fur was shorn away. A symbol had been carved into the poor boy's flank.
Shh! It's all right. It's all right.
Ichabod peered into the dark of the schoolhouse door. He felt sure the devil had come to Sleepy Hollow.
You're listening to Plan B Theater's production of Radio Hour, Episode 15, Sleepy Hollow. Act 3, when we come back from a break. This is Radio West on KUER.
KUER is your local NPR station, a statewide service connecting Utah and the world. As part of our mission, we value diverse perspectives from communities across the state. So if you have a few minutes, consider providing your input about our news and programming. Our secure feedback form lets you share issues that you'd like us to report on in your community, ask questions about a story you heard on our air, and more. To leave us a note, go to KUER.org/feedback.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, a live radio play from Plan B Theater Company. This is episode 15 of our Radio Hour series, Sleepy Hollow. Now, Act 3.
The dog lived. Ichabod had carried the poor thing to Dr. Woolcott's and waded in the smell of antiseptic. For days, the town argued. Was witchery afoot at the schoolhouse? Had some hooligans come from the city? For nights, Ichabod slept with braided garlic and felt for the devil. And yet, the menace would be forgotten with nothing more than a personal invite to the Van Tassel's party. The calligraphy was hers. Cinnamon had been sprinkled in the envelope.
Behold, your vocabulary for Monday. Questions for the assigned reading. Some long division for entertainment. Class dismissed.
We haven't had lunch, Mr. Crane.
Maggie, a party has been announced at the Van Tassel's. Class dismissed. Sling your books. Spill your inkstands. Burst forth like an army of imps.
Behind the Van Ripper's barn, Ichabod splashed his armpits and scrubbed at pimples. Despair rinsed away as he arranged his hair in a broken piece of mirror. So it went with his moods. One day he felt like a mole rat, the next a falcon. Today he soared. By 3 o'clock he dashed off the last lines of the sonnet he'd begun 2 weeks ago in the schoolhouse. At 4 o'clock he figured that he and his Dutch princess would elope from Sleepy Hollow.
Mr. Van Ripper, good evening. I must have your finest stallion for the party. I will take the white one.
I don't have a white one.
The whitish one, over there.
Oh, you best not try to mount him, boy.
Mr. Van Ripper, I have barely asked you for anything but day-old bread.
I've seen you ride, Crane. You don't want that horse. Take gunpowder.
Oh, Gunpowder is half bald and his mane is full of burrs. He's missing an eye.
You can brush him out.
The party is about to begin, Mr. Van Ripper. I beg you for alternatives.
In his day, Gunpowder had more spunk than every filly in the country. He could still jump if you feed him half a potato. You want my potato?
Mr. Van Ripper, I am trying to impress a lady. What can you do for me?
I can keep you off a horse that's better looking than you are. The way I see it, you're riding on a one-eyed plow horse. Nobody cares what's wrong with you.
Very well. Gunpowder it is. And you can keep your potato.
Ichabod rode with stirrups too short. His knees came to the saddle grip. His elbows jutted out like grasshopper legs. But it was a fine autumn day. He smacked his lips at the troves of apples and cornfields waiting to be picked. Beside the wheat, he breathed in the odor of beehives, and fantasy stole through him. In his thoughts, Ichabod was buttering a pancake for his wife and sliding her a pot of honey.
Crooknose! Welcome! I believe you may have fallen on a bar of soap.
Hello, Mr. Bones. I may have. Are you the greeter?
Well, one has to give back. Even butlers deserve some cider now and then. Do my eyes deceive me, or did you give a four-legged ghost to the stable boy?
No ghost, Mr. Bones. Gunpowder may be up in years, but he has some fire.
Does he? Would you care to race him against my daredevil?
Perhaps later, after a pudding or two. Have you seen my star pupil?
Who's that?
Your fiancé, that is, at the point you propose.
Oh, well, I suspect she's somewhere by the pond.
Capital. I must thank her for the invitation.
Wait, Crane. I have to tell you. I know who cut up the dog. I know who the witch is.
Really?
The gents and I have been puzzling over it, and we know for a certainty it wasn't some hooligan from the city trying to spook you the other week.
How can you know that?
The Smith boy. He saw some dog's hair, a pile of black hair behind Old Peg's Tavern. Bloody. He went to the Reverend went to me.
Old Peg?
Shh. Do you remember when she denied there was a headless horseman?
Did she?
She questioned it. And that's how they blend in, you know. They say, no such thing as the devil.
I don't know if Peg...
Look, think on it. Though we have to act before her tracks dry. The attack was only days ago, man. Why are the wheels of justice not turning in your mind?
It is, it is.
We have the hair. The Smith boy can swear in court. I can head the posse.
Do
all
we
right?
need a posse?
She killed a dog, Crane. And she did black magic beside the schoolhouse.
She tried. Someone tried. But the dog is walking again.
It's as good as dead. That dog will never retrieve another duck.
The evidence brought against a witch must be clear.
I know the gravity of this. As the eldest of my house, I have many responsibilities towards this town, and I feel them, Crane. I feel them sharp against my back.
Happy harvest, Cat.
Is it?
So far for me, including the invite you sent, the bit of spice you put in.
Mother's idea.
Oh.
You look green around the gills. What is it?
Nothing. Well... Hey, Brom, forget Brom. The sight of you standing here alone with the birds, it reminds me too much of Jean-Jacques Rousseau to waste the moment on other men.
You finished Rousseau.
Oh, finally.
And?
I loved it, start to finish. Though I fear I'm on the side of modernity.
Of course you are. You're a man.
Barely.
Oh, please. I would trade any specimen in Sleepy Hollow for you.
Would you?
I'd rather have a friend with 10 minutes of conversation in him than... Have they set out the pies yet? My aunt makes a marvelous ginger cake.
I wrote a sonnet for you, Cat. May I read it before the feast? I better command my tongue than my pen. My pen than my tongue, and so...
Oh, Ichabod.
It's 14 lines. A, B, A, B.
I know what a sonnet is.
If he offends in penning this fancy, you must forgive his pale and doltish heart.
Stop. First of all, your heart is anything but pale. You carried a wounded dog 2 miles in the pitch of night to save it.
I suppose.
Second, I need us as we are. If I have to live as I have to, I need you in your current capacity. Do you understand?
I don't understand why you have to live in any way but the one you want.
I know. One of the many things I admire about you foremost is your naivete. But understand... Brahm is going to ask for my hand tonight, and I'm going to give it.
For your father's debts?
For much more.
What more?
It's either me or my sister, Marina, and I won't... It's going to be me. It was always going to be me. Our parents joked about it when Brahm and I were toddlers, back when he was shy and tender and I was just beginning to be stubborn. But really, it must be me, because I think I can better protect the town than Marina from...
From what?
Secrets bigger than you and
is
I.
Is any secret bigger than love?
Yes.
Cat, I cannot bear your unhappiness, nor should you. Let's run away, now. What I lack in sinew, I recoup in constancy. I have a month's pay with me. I will serve you. I will lie at the foot of your bed.
I don't want another servant. I just... Swear to me you'll keep quiet.
No.
Swear to me and we can know together. We can continue as we are and say nothing.
Nothing of what?
There is a sort of club that oversees Sleepy Hollow. An old club. They meet late, do rituals. They say it accords with Christ, protects the town from evil.
But you doubt this?
They use the name of our Lord. And my father, he showed me a room with trophies. Bones.
From what?
Witch hunts, decades old.
Oh, Lord. They must be on the hunt again. I was not willing to entertain it, but Brahm thinks Old Peg is a witch.
I know. Brahm's been grousing about Old Peg, but I know she's helped a dozen girls with... She has a good heart.
What has she helped with?
Problems. Ones that are unique to my sex and its position in society.
Do you mean...
Don't ask me what I mean.
But you think the Van Brunts and this old club would frame her as a witch? Why?
I only have feelings. No smoking musket. I know that a chill ran through me when I set foot in the trophy room, and I want someone else to know.
I'm telling the mayor.
The mayor's a member of their club.
Then I shall ride to Tarrytown, speak with a journalist, the council.
Don't.
I will not see you dragged into lies or anyone smothered in secrets.
My friend.
You are the only pure good thing in this county. I have no choice here. You can reject my love, and still I have no choice.
You'd go to Terry as my friend?
I will go however you hold me in your heart.
My heart does hold you, Ichabod. It's only that...
You don't have to clarify. I prefer you not to. Let it be a mystery, mistress.
All right, then. But if you go...
I'm going.
If you go, you have to come back to me.
I will.
Not right away. Tell them about the dog and the schoolhouse and make them make someone investigate it properly.
I'll torment them with my singing if they don't. Although I have to render my account honestly. I heard my mother's voice. I heard it.
I know. I know you did, Ichabod. And do not spare them that detail. Someone is likelier to come if you tell them that. Now go, while everyone's eating and half drunk.
What is that for? People can see.
It's for luck, Ichabod Crane. And I don't care if they see. Get yourself to Terry. His stomach growling, Ichabod rode away as the land swung into night. He could still smell the rose water of his Dutch princess. The way out of Sleepy Hollow brought him to the church. On the hilltop it sat, surrounded by locust trees. The walls shone white with purity, or would have, had Ichabod not been suddenly in doubt of the reverend and town fathers. He whistled a favorite psalm as Gunpowder trotted into the shade of overhanging trees. Partway through a verse, he saw something hanging in the midst of an elm. Unbidden, he remembered the gown his mother was buried in, her voice at the schoolhouse, or had it been her? What rituals did this club undertake? Had the devil spoiled them, even as they kneeled beneath the cross? Oh, just a blast of wind, he calmed himself. The bright spot in the elm revealed itself as a place the tree had been scathed by lightning. No specter lurked. But then, out of the marsh on his left, something huge, misshapen and towering gathered. To Ichabod's credit, he summoned a show of courage.
Who are you?
No reply.
I said, who are you?
The shadow put itself in motion. It made no move toward assault or sociability, but kept aloof, jogging on the blind side of old Gunpowder.
Where are you bound?
No reply. The traveler clopped on without any sign of having heard him. Ichabod squinted through a pattern of starlight and leaves and finally beheld the figure in full. Gigantic, muffled in a cloak, headless.
Worse, the head it should have was carried on the saddle.
Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
Stones flew, sparks flashed, coattails billowed. Ichabod stretched his body over his horse's head.
Faster!
The plow horse panicked. It ran left and right. The saddle loosened and gave way.
Oh, no, 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 no!
The schoolmaster hung from Gunpowder's neck as the saddle fell. His fingers clung to the ridge of the horse's back. He thought of his Dutch princess and climbed up. He spied an opening in the trees ahead, a covered bridge at the town's edge.
Get me to the bridge, old fellow. Spirits cannot cross running water.
He looked back at the horseman. Was it a trick of light, or had the black steed become a skeleton?
Archangels, defend me!
Gunpowder clattered onto the bridge, and sounds of his pursuer died away. He dared another glance back to see if his pursuer had vanished. No. The goblin had stopped, but now was rising in his stirrups and hurling his own head. Ichabod tried to duck, but was too slow.
After a day or so, Mr. Van Ripper came round to the mansion, asking after Ichabod and his plow horse. I helped him search the road outside of town. We found Gunpowder cropping the grass. The saddle lay in a hedge, and at the bridge we found a shattered pumpkin. That was the last sign of my tutor and friend. By candle I have set down these words with some flourishes and guesses in the hope to publish them one day. I tried to collect statements from the folk of Sleepy Hollow in order to write a non-fiction account, but my attempts bore no fruit. Ichabod Crane was an orphan, a bachelor, and in no one's debt. The town would gossip, but not trouble themselves over him. I also fear some citizens have had motivation to drop the matter. Last, as a married woman and soon-to-be mother is not expected to dabble in literature, I fear my audience shall have one member for a time. Until then, dear reader, I... Hello? Hello? Brom, darling, is that you? Oh, handsome man.
Plan B Theatre Company's Radio Hour, Episode 15, Sleepy Hollow, was written by Matthew Ivan Bennett, with direction and sound design by Cheryl Ann Clough. The show was performed by Isabella Reeder, Jay Perry, and Doug Fabrizio. Original music by David Evanoff. Our e-Foley artist is Joe Killian. Show art from Aaron Swenson. The production was mixed by Brian Albers. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out at Radio West. Radio West is produced by Benjamin Bombard, by Tim Slover and Carrie Watson. I'm Doug Fabrizio.